Good morning to everyone in the Diocese of Orange and everywhere in Southern California. You're listening to Orange County Catholic Radio on AM 1000 in Orange and San Diego counties and on AM 930 in Los Angeles County. We're coming to you through the good offices of Immaculate Heart Radio today from our studios on the campus of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove, where Catholic faith is crystal clear. I'm Rick Howick of St. Joseph Radio, and with me today is a good friend of mine, Daryl Sequeira. Daryl, welcome to Orange County Catholic Radio.
Thank you, Rick. It's good to be here this afternoon.
And Daryl comes to us from Servite High School, where Daryl is both a religion and philosophy teacher there at Servite.
Yes.
Daryl, if you wouldn't mind, would you lead us in a short word of prayer?
Sure. No problem, Rick. Well, as always, we begin in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. Heavenly Father, we ask you to bless us this afternoon as we continue to do your work through the wonderful medium of radio. We ask for your blessings upon us, upon our church, and our community here in Orange County and across the world. And we ask these things as always in your Son's name, we pray. Amen.
Amen. I brought Daryl on today because I wanted us to talk a little bit about Catholic education. And Daryl, you come to us from Servite, but your background goes back quite a long ways. You have a master's in history.
Yes.
And before that, you were in, do they call it minor seminary?
Both. I was actually at Queen Evangel Seminary in San Fernando, which is now Bishop Alemany High School.
Okay.
For those of you familiar with the San Fernando Valley. But graduated from the high school and then went to St. John's Seminary College, although I did spend 1 year at UC Irvine. So I was kind of figuring out what I wanted with my life and went to, got my bachelor's degree in philosophy and theology from St. John's College.
And you became a father, but not in the priestly sort of way.
No, not in the priestly sort of a way.
You have eight children.
Eight children, yes.
Yes.
Ranging from 23 to 5 years old, going to be six real soon, and everything in between. So
Martha's that young, I mean, that old now. Wow.
Yes, she's actually in pre-K. She's going to kindergarten next year.
That's incredible. With that in mind, I'd like to talk a little bit about where you've also been. I know that I got to know you in a different diocese working in Catholic education, and you've done everything from being a high school teacher through being an assistant principal, principal, president. You've got quite a background for 20-plus years in Catholic education.
Mm-hmm.
I had a similar background in some ways, but not nearly as high as you were able to go. And your tenure at Servite has been focused on religion, which has really been your love.
Yes.
And I'd like to ask you, from a perspective of someone on the outside looking in, what's Servite High School like for, let's say I were to send a son who's about to become a ninth grader, what would he expect by coming to Servite High School?
It's a good question, Rick. I actually have a son who is attending Servite right now. He's a sophomore there. I have another son who's in seventh grade, and I'm planning to send him to Servite as well. I think the one thing that Servite offers that I really find attractive, and it speaks to me from my own high school experience, is this idea of forming young men really in their faith. Putting a central understanding of that, you know, Servite is a all-boys school, and from the very first day they enter the campus, when they go through the freshman formation program in the summer, they really do build a sense of what I would call brotherhood. This idea that young men can come and share their faith, they can learn about the world academically, but at the same time have a safe environment in which they can explore their faith as young men.
So, for example, what was Easter like going through this process of Holy Week for the young men that were in your classes?
Well, in my classes, let's back up a little, because the formation program there had a formation day, which we do at least once a quarter, if not more often than that. And so they focused on the Stations of the Cross in their formational meetings. So on Holy Thursday, we had Grandparents' Day that day, and so we had grandparents come in and visit the school, and we had a concert and things. But the other classes were shorter, so I went over the idea of the Easter Triduum. They had just talked about the Stations of the Cross all the way, all 14 through formation. And then in my class, we looked at the celebration of the great feast of the Triduum to really have them understand this wonderful feast in our church, this three-day-long celebration, which some of them didn't know. And the grandparents actually were great that day. They were asking questions, and I kind of pointed it back to my students and said, hey, look, your grandparents are really asking good questions. You guys need to kind of get engaged in that. That's how we really prepared, is the idea that we are going into this Holy Week, that we are focusing in on the celebration of Easter. And in each of the theology classes, we've been doing that all Lent long, that is, focusing on repentance, having a penance service and things. So there's that whole aspect of the faith that is very much integrated into the life at Servite.
So then let me back up for a moment. Mm-hmm. We both have sent our kids in through Catholic education. We've gone through, at least our children have gone through at the elementary level. For the kids that come into Servite, do you see a distinction or a difference that you can generalize about from those that have had the Catholic background, or is it pretty much the same as it melds in?
I think from the academic perspective, the students that come from Catholic schools or public schools or another, maybe a charter school, have a similar academic preparation. Where I see the advantage of Catholic education at the elementary level is the fact that they do have a basic understanding of the faith. They understand what the liturgy is. They understand a little bit about the sacraments. And what we do is we take that basic idea of their faith and we help to make it better for them, help to make it deeper for them to have a deeper understanding of the faith through all 4 years of the theology program. I think it's a benefit, obviously, for those who are looking to send their kids to a Catholic elementary school, and I realize it is a sacrifice to have your kids in that environment. I really think it helps to have them formed properly, not just academically, but in a spiritual way, so they're familiar with what we do at Servite. I would transfer that to any of the Catholic high schools that I've worked at, diocesan or non-diocesan.
So this is the season. We're coming into April or so, and schools start putting out there, we want you to come in and look at our school. We want you to consider a Catholic education. Mm-hmm. So the parents who are looking at the expense of sending their children to school, although I do understand now that the Diocese of Orange, anyway, has a significant program to try to make Catholic education affordable for those who otherwise couldn't afford it, so that the parents really, really need to look at that. If finances are the only reason why they're not going to send their child to a Catholic elementary school anyway, they need to check that out before they say
definitely.
No.
Yes, definitely.
But the advantages for going to a Catholic school versus a public school, what would they be?
Again, I think the number one advantage is going to be that formational aspect. Again, I'm speaking from my experience of being an administrator, teacher, both at Diocesan and now at Servite. That is something that I think, not that it's missing from a public school, you're going to get a great education there. My daughter's graduated from a public high school out where I live, out in Murrieta, California. Nothing wrong with those schools, but I know that in my son's experience and my daughter's, who did go to Catholic school for a short time, high school, that was missing. And I think for parents seriously considering looking at where their students are going to go, they have to ask themselves that question. It is an investment, and there is financial aid available, even at Servite, and we strive every day to try to do that. Even the guys themselves there, we have a program that is called Brothers Helping Brothers. And it really does, with the students themselves, help to donate. I'll give you a quick example of why this is what makes a difference. We had a student whose family lost their house in a fire, and within a few days, they had raised $5,000-$6,000 to help this family out. Now, I know at my kids' school in Murrieta that there are similar circumstances, but this community just came together, and they supported this family. And that's the kind of thing I think that you see in a Catholic high school, this community that rallies around people. And that's just one example of how they do that. And that's across the board in terms of sports and everything else as well. There's this different environment of belonging, of Christian community. Not that everything is perfect. I mean, there's no perfect school system. But I think that there's a great deal of an advantage to that in sending your student to a Catholic elementary or high school.
Let's go down to a couple of other elements that make Servite a little bit different as well.
Mm-hmm.
Servite is not a diocesan school.
This is true, yes.
How is Servite classified?
Servite
why?
Is classified as an order school. We belong to the Servants of Mary. It's an old order dating all the way back to the 13th century, and they've been educating young men for years. And they're not just a school that is located here in Orange County. They're across the globe. So we have schools in Australia, in Africa, in India. Servites are around the world. They have a main cathedral base up in Chicago, and then there's a shrine up in Washington State as well. And so they bring this global perspective, I think, that the order schools can bring to the community. So there's a lot of outreach. Right now we're doing a program to help build a well in honor of one of our priests who passed away a little over a year ago in Africa. So we're doing a fundraiser. We're going to be running a 5K, I think it's out in April, to help connect our students not just with the local community, but that we are a worldwide church, that our ministry is not just limited to a small local area.
Does that mean you have no relationship whatsoever with the Diocese of Orange?
Oh, no, no. We have a great relationship with the Diocese of Orange. I mean, we compete in the Trinity League against all of the major Catholic high schools and then Orange Lutheran as well. We do well for being a small boys' school. Obviously, we team up with our sister school, Rosary Academy in Fullerton. And so we have that interaction. But we are very much involved with the diocese. We do things with the schools, other schools here, involving ourselves in various convocations. And our students are involved in various things with the diocese as well, whether it's singing at a liturgy or special event.
And your school is also accredited the same way that other diocesan schools are.
Yes, we go through the same WASC accreditation, WCEA,
Western Association
of Schools and Colleges, and then the Western Catholic Education Association as well.
Okay. And if you're looking then at the second difference that you've got, you mentioned it briefly, but yours is a all-boys school.
Yes, we are all boys. There is a single-sex school. And I think, again, Rick, that offers a great deal of advantage, at least from my perspective.
When we come back, we're going to go ahead and talk a little bit more about that. I want to ask you a couple of questions about not only the distinctions between what you've seen as a difference, having been at both a co-ed school where you were administratively in charge, and then for a single-gender school like Servite. And then I want to ask a little bit about your curriculum. I know that Common Core is big out there, and yet it's got a lot of detractions as well. I want to ask you a couple of questions about both of those.
Okay.
You're listening to Orange County Catholic Radio. I'm Rick Howick, your host. With me today is Daryl Sequeira, who is a teacher of both religion and philosophy at Servite High School in the Orange County area. And we're coming to you from high atop the Tower of Hope at Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove. And we'll be right back. And we're back. This is Rick Howick, your host, and I'm here today with Daryl Sequeira. And we are talking a little bit about Catholic education in the Diocese of Orange, but specifically at Servite High School. And Daryl, when we were talking before, you had mentioned, or we had mentioned, that Servite was an all-boys school.
Yes.
And I wanted to ask you a little bit this segment about what's actually taught and why, and how effective it is at Servite High School. So it's an all-boys school. What's the advantage of having a single-gender school?
I think the number one advantage for having a single-gender school or single-sex school is the fact that the young men there can really kind of grow in by themselves within an environment that really kind of caters to the needs of young men. I think one of the things that we've learned through various in-services is that boys and girls learn differently. Men, boys, tend to be much more active. They don't sit still. I mean, anyone who has a young son, I've got young sons, know that they kind of run around, they do kinds of things, and there's a lot more activity involved with that. And this allows them to kind of be in that same kind of environment where we can kind of adapt the educational system to meet their basic needs. And I think that's the number one advantage, is they're able to grow in an environment in which they can be boys, they can be grow into young men, and have the advantage to do that. Not that you can't grow that way in a co-ed school. I've worked at a co-ed school, taught in co-ed classrooms, and that's a possibility. But I just tend to find that in my classes that I teach seniors and a section of juniors, is that they tend to be much more open to discussion in a single-sex environment. I know my son, who's been there now finishing up his second year, has really thrived in this environment. You know, he went to a co-ed elementary school, Catholic elementary school, and he did okay grade-wise. And then when he got to Servite, it was kind of like he just fit in, and he was the only one from his school who went. And they took him in as part of this. We always talk about this brotherhood there at Servite. And he just fit in, and he's really thrived at the school academically, but socially as well.
Okay, so the single gender environment is an aspect of Servite that is an enhancement for the men.
Yes.
Those who go to a co-ed Catholic school are still going to have the community. But
yes.
by having the single sex school, you've got some less distraction and more of
yes.
an ability for boys to be boys, but within a proper sense to what
yes,
that means.
Yes. And it's not like, you know, the Servite boys don't interact with girls at all. I mean, they've got the tri-school theater, which they interact with the Connolly and Rosary girls all the time. My son's on the track team, so he runs cross country and track, and so the Rosary girls also are a part of that. So they interact with girls. It's not that they don't interact and have the socialization. I know that's a concern for parents who oftentimes are looking at a school like Servite or Rosary, is that there isn't this opportunity for socialization. Believe me, there's plenty of opportunity for socialization. But I think the advantage that I mentioned earlier is that they're able to operate in the academic environment during the day without that, what I'll call distraction, and that they can be very much open to learning, both from the male teachers and the female teachers. It was just interesting the other day, one of our female teachers told somebody they were working at Servite, and they said, oh, I didn't know they hired female teachers, and of course they do. And so they do interact and have to know how to behave in front of women because there are female teachers there, because they interact with the girls from Rosary and Connolly at dances and at activities, theater, sports activities. So there's none of that aspect where they're not being socialized. I know sometimes, you know, even students think, okay, I can't go there because it's all boys or it's all girls. But what I think single-sex educational environments do offer is the ability for students to grow as young men and women, to understand that there are differences between men and women, and that we can adapt the educational environment to meet their specific needs.
Okay. I know that the curriculum that you guys are following is not the same as what we would call Common Core.
Yes.
Can you talk for a moment about what Common Core is and versus what Servite has, which I think you've said before, is a classical education?
Well, I think when we talk to parents about, the first question they ask is, you know, because they're concerned, is my student going to get a good quality education here? Are they going to get the formation? Are they going to be able to choose to go to any college they want? Common Core is something which is like No Child Left Behind, depending on which administration's in office, is another way of kind of putting together almost a one-size-fits-all model. At least that's how I see it sometimes from my perspective. Now, I know other educators who might disagree with that assessment of it. But having been in education, now Catholic education, for a little over 20 years, almost 25 years now, one of the things that we like to emphasize at Servite is while we follow the state standards and we have all the things that will qualify us, our students to go on to any university or college they would like to attend in the country, we always talk about Christ being the center of our core. And in that, I like to look at what I call the classical educational model. And there are three things that I see as a philosophy teacher, as a theology teacher, is this idea of truth, goodness, and beauty. Truth is found in Christ, and so therefore Christ is our core. He is the ultimate truth. And so when I teach the philosophy class, that's always in the back of my mind as I'm teaching that, or if I teach a theology class, we always come back to the same kind of a theme. What does it mean to be good? We really focus on this idea of goodness, that being good is being like Christ, and that when we talk about things that are beauty, they reflect the beauty of God, of His creation. And so I think that distinguishes a Catholic educational model as opposed to just an educational model. This idea that philosophy of theology of truth, goodness, and beauty imbues everything that we do. And in the center of that is the sacramental life of the church as well, having liturgies and Mass at least once a month, if not more, the opportunity to go to daily Mass, adoration. All those things are part of what we do at Servite that gives young men the unique opportunity to experience that.
So if we're talking about the distinctions between what someone would get at, say, a Catholic high school, Servite or otherwise, mm-hmm. versus what they would have from a public school, the focus isn't so much on the different standards, because
correct.
The California standards, the Common Core standards, are all very, very similar as far as which benchmarks you're going to hit.
Yes.
It's about the focus of what the overarching theme is of the education.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, my daughters have gone to public school. Again, great public school that they go to out in Murrieta. No complaints from the administration or what they've learned, that I think they've been academically prepared. But what I kind of see happening in education over the past number of years is that it's looking to produce productive members of society that go into the working field, make money, and live their lives without a sense of what it means to be a human being beyond the productivity side of it. That the formation informational aspect is somewhat has gone out of the educational system. And again, I think Common Core is trying to do something good and trying to set a standard. But I think the standard should be, Rick, is what is true about human beings? What makes us uniquely human? What's going to be something that goes beyond simply the material things? We know we've lived through tough economic times these last number of years, and people who have focused on just the economic aspect, when all that is taken away, have nothing to fall back on. I think what I try to do at Servite and what the teachers at Servite try to do, and I think this would be for all Catholic schools, is to have our students understand that while education and getting a job is important, what is important are those things which are eternal, those things which last forever. And I think while a public school can do a good job educating a student, I don't think that formational aspect can come through. At least I see that in my own kids who've graduated from public high schools. We've done that as parents at home through our church programs that they're involved in, through confirmation or actively involved in youth ministry or choir or anything like that, because we want them to have that aspect because they didn't have the opportunity to go to Catholic high school from where we live. My son is fortunate enough to be able to go to Servite out of the generosity of the order and those who support the school. And I would not have it any other way.
So if we're looking at, in general, the formation of kids today at the high school level, you would say that the formation that the children get that go through Servite or other Catholic high schools, other Catholic school-based children, they're coming out as a better formed student in general?
I would say in general, yes. But obviously, Rick, this also goes back to the parents. You know, the parents also have to be involved. If you're a parent who's just sending their student to Servite or another Catholic high school, you know, whether it's Mater Dei or Santa Margarita here in Orange County or in the LA schools, and you're seeking for them to give religion to your student, that's probably not going to work that well. You as a parent have to be involved with your son or your daughter in their formation. And I think that's going to be key to helping them come out. So if it's important to you and you're willing to put that, as I say, an investment, but I don't even really see it from the monetary, but invest your time and energy to making sure that the faith is important, they're going to come out much stronger in their faith. Really, they're going to follow your example. We help to enhance what is already being brought to them at home. So the faith at home is going to be very much important as part of that. But we offer that extra help to a parent that maybe won't be countermanded by what maybe is sometimes taught in public schools in terms of there's kind of a relativistic understanding of the world, and there's not really an idea of truth. It's whatever kind of you want to make it to be. And we see that flowing into our, you know, political and social realm around us.
Which I want to go into in the next section, but not just yet. But when you're talking about how the children are formed, then it's got equal components, or at least there are elements from both what the school is going to bring into it, but also what the parents are going to bring into it. Both you and I are aware of schools around the country that are Catholic at both the high school and college level in name only,
yes,
or pretty close to name only, in which case you basically have an educational system with a Catholic flavor.
Yes.
Servite is not that way.
No.
And there are many good schools in the Diocese of Orange that are not that way. Mm-hmm. What you're going to get is that collaboration where if the parents are putting into it, they're going to have the echo that's needed at Servite.
Correct.
To help finalize that formation.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree with that.
So if you're talking about the major reasons to go to Servite High School, it would be because your education is good, but your formation is excellent.
Yes.
Okay. When we come back, Daryl, I'd like to shift gears a little bit and talk a little bit about how this applies in society. What we haven't talked about yet is that you also teach college on the side.
Yes.
You've been doing that for a number of years. And I'd like to get your take a little bit on how kids today, college kids, those of us in our 50s, they're kids. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
how kids today are actually acting and interacting. Mm-hmm. And it's I think, the next step for this conversation as to what we actually are seeing out there. And then I'd like you to apply a little bit, perhaps in that last section, about what we're seeing today, perhaps in our political field, versus how you would analyze it from a philosophical perspective that your kids at Servite would be getting.
Okay.
You're listening to Orange County Catholic Radio. I'm Rick Howick, your host. With me today is Daryl Sequeira, and we'll be back in just a minute or two. And And we're back on Orange County Catholic Radio. I'm Rick Howick, your host, and we're talking today with Daryl Sequeira. And we spent the first couple of segments talking specifically about Servite High School and Catholic education. Mm-hmm. I want to shift gears a little bit, Daryl. Your background not only includes Catholic education specifically, but you have a master's degree in American history. You teach at the college level as well. And you've been able to see students coming through for the last 20 years or so.
Yes.
And I'd like to ask you, I'm looking at what's going on in our society right now, and without painting it any more than that, what trends do you see out there right now? And I'm asking it through the lens of a Catholic educator who also teaches college.
Okay. Yeah. I've been teaching U.S. history now at Mount San Jacinto College for a little over 20 years now, since I graduated from Cal State Fullerton with a master's in history. What I kind of see, again, goes back to what you were talking about earlier, Rick, is this denial of what I call truth or goodness or beauty. That a lot of students in college, again, see college as a step towards a career boost. So at Mount San Jacinto College, it's a community college out in the Inland Empire. There's a lot of students who are returning from the working field. They've been maybe unemployed or whatever, looking to improve their skills, get a degree. So they're back in the classroom. And then it's a mix. It's a night class. So you have a mix of students who are in high school. A lot of them are working. So what I kind of see in the college realm, so to speak, are students who are looking to improve themselves. But like in high school, there oftentimes is this lack of understanding what education really is about. So they're looking to get a good education to get a better job, which is understandable.
That's a utilitarian.
Yes, a very utilitarian approach to college. What I try to do with within my U.S. history classes is to give them, while it's a public school, I can't, you know, give them a theology class in there, is to try to help them understand from a philosophical perspective, especially in American history, that there are certain ideals upon which this country is founded. Before we were on spring break last week from Mount San Jacinto, and we're going back. So tonight I actually am teaching my U.S. history class this evening. And last week before we went to break, we were talking about the Constitution and what were the ideals after the American Revolution. And we focused in on the ideas of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I went by and basically explained from the Declaration of Independence that these rights were not given to us by government, but these rights were given to us by, endowed by their creator, to quote Thomas Jefferson in the Declaration. And so we discussed that in class. What does that mean? What are these ideals? What are the things that are the common good of our society? And I think we've lost that understanding, Rick, and we're seeing it in our politics today. Not to get into, you know, partisan politics or anything, but that we've lost an understanding of what the common good means in our society today. And so we have people left, right, center, or whatever, without a commonality, something to tie us together. So what I try to express through what I'll call a secular educational model in Mount San Jacinto is, well, what are these ideals on which the country was founded? What ties us together as Americans? And so I emphasize that. This evening we'll be talking about, continuing our doc on the Constitution, but we'll look at the amendments to the Constitution, what exactly those mean, particularly the First Amendment, the freedom from religion, freedom of religion, freedom of the press, freedom of speech, all of these things. So we'll look at the ideals of what does that mean and how was that challenged in the early days of a republic. So I bring these same themes that I use in my theology class, but from a historical perspective. And I think having the background in both philosophy, theology, and history, for me, it's a great because it brings all these three areas that I have a passion for and tries to bring them together in a way that hopefully it makes connections with the students, this idea of there are eternal things. There are things which are right and wrong in our society.
All right. I'm thinking now of the students who they saw a political statement etched in chalk about a particular candidate in 2016. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they panicked. They freaked out. They needed to go to a happy space. Well, that's essentially what
yes,
they were
saying.
Yes,
that's true.
Not, to belittle it, but to belittle it just a little bit.
Okay.
I mean, my goodness, I see that as a problem.
Okay.
What's causing that problem? I don't remember seeing that when I was in college, and I want to say back when I was in school.
Yes.
Back in the days of the Mastodon. But
well, the watch was just cooling.
Yes, yeah. That's right. That's right, yeah. When you looked at your watch, it was the sundial. Got it.
Yeah.
But what's changed fundamentally?
That's a hard one to really answer. I mean, I think from my perspective and the students that I've been teaching at 20-some plus years now at Mount San Jacinto, and maybe I don't see this in my college students there because they do come from a background where there's not necessarily privilege. These are our community college students whose parents maybe don't have the money or they don't have the money to go to what I would call a big-name university. So I don't cut slack with the students at school. I kind of laid out the truth and said, you don't have to agree with me on this, but this is what education is about, exploring ideas, exchange of ideas. This is what a university should be. So when I see things like that happening on campus, I think to myself, well, why is it that these students can't exchange ideas? If they believe their ideas to be true, then whatever's put on a chalkboard is simply what's put on a chalkboard. Discuss it. You know, have a debate about it. Why is this idea better than this other idea? I mean, this is something that universities are supposed to do. They're not supposed to be a one-size-fits-all, or this is the only ideology or philosophy that we have to do. The idea of a university is to have all ideas presented. But it goes back to that question we talked about earlier, Rick, is that seeking the truth. I think when universities today and colleges, what I see today happening is there is a lack of seeking of truth. And because of that, everybody's ideas can be equal, and then some ideas are less equal than others. And they don't want to listen to any other opposing ideas, because I think what that does, at least when I discuss with my students, is it sharpens their ability to understand their position. They may not agree with me in my theology classes at Servite or at Mount San Jacinto, but what I want them to do is to make a discussion or an argument that why their case would be right. So when I assign a question for an essay question for a midterm at San Jacinto, it's okay. They ask me, is there a right or wrong answer? No, not really. Can you prove to me your perspective showing evidence that would help back up your case? That's what I'm looking for.
What's the difference between what you're asking there and moral relativism? Because when I used to teach morality back in high school many years ago, the key difference between the morality of our society and the morality of Catholic faith is the idea that there is such a thing as objective truth mm-hmm. in Catholic faith. And in our society, that seems to no longer be the case for mm-hmm. the majority of people. Or there's a tolerance, quote unquote, for other people's truths, even mm-hmm. if I happen to hold to one myself.
Correct.
Do you see that as being part of the problem with what we've got right now in working with kids that seem to not be able to handle microaggressions mm-hmm. and these challenges to their way of thinking?
Well, Rick, I think if I were to analyze it, I would look at it from the perspective of that when someone hears something that's true, and they don't necessarily, maybe they haven't heard it before, or maybe it's a challenge to them. People, generally speaking, don't like change. You throw change at somebody, you throw change at a little kid, and you change the schedule up, they get really upset. So I think in some ways our society does not like change. And so when you challenge a student in their beliefs, and they've grown up with this, what I call relativism, this idea that all truths are the same, or that there is no truth, which is internally a contradiction in itself, because you've created a truth that there's one, I explained this in my philosophy class, then there's got to be other truths as well. And when we don't seek that idea of truth in our educational system, we don't challenge beliefs and we question them, the only thing, again, it's going to do, if you are correct, if it's true, it's going to be proven to be true. Students tend to say, well, I don't want to hear that because it's going to challenge me. It's going to make me change my opinion. Or maybe what I held for many years is actually wrong. And that's very upsetting for people. You know, even for myself, if I find something that I've held a belief to be correct and I found out to be, well, that's not true, then obviously it's a little upsetting and people don't like to be upset. So we like to kind of live in our own little world of what we want to, hold to and cling to, and then yet at the same time not acknowledge something when it faces us and say, okay, here's the reality in which we're facing.
I wonder if there isn't also a sense of entitlement that mm-hmm. that it's not fair that my ideas are challenged and perhaps mm-hmm. may not hold up to being correct in the grand scheme of things. Mm-hmm. I would tie this almost to some of the stuff that I've seen on grade inflation at the college okay. level. Mm-hmm. If you were to look at the statistics for grades in 1950, the average grade at 35% was a C. The next grade was at 32% was a B. Mm-hmm. And then down at 15% was an A, followed by D's and F's.
Okay.
Whereas in 2010, the average grade at 43% is an A, not a C. The,
okay.
The second most popular grade at just under 35% is a B. The next grade down at 15% is a C, and D's and F's are almost the same at 2 or 3%. That's grade inflation.
Well, that's not a grade inflation. I think it's a disservice to the student to do that. You know, C, and this is the hardest thing, even for students at the high school level, when, I give a C to a student and they complain, well, how come I got a C? Well, you did what was expected of you in the 12th grade, 11th grade, and the same thing in college. you know, when I gave my midterm a few weeks ago and I went back and gave statistics on the midterm, I always put the statistics up for the class to kind of see. And I always review that beforehand because I look at it from the perspective of the majority of grades should be around the sea level, what's expected of them at an upper, lower division general education class at a college that's going to be transferable to a Cal State, UC, or any four-year university. I think it's a disservice if an instructor or a teacher says, well, I'm going to give you the A anyways because, you know, that's going to get you ahead. Well, does that really get you ahead? You know, if you're going to go to the next level of education, next level up from there, is it going to be doing you a disservice to give you an inflated grade? Because then when you get to the next level, one of two things is going to happen. You're either not going to be successful in that class, and it's going to show through, or they continue passing that on. And if they pass that on all the way out of the college, then you get out into the working field where you cannot perform in a job. And hence, you know, we're seeing throughout our country, you know, college graduates who aren't qualified, who have a degree, but maybe aren't qualified, you know, or equivalency maybe would have been a high school diploma back in the 1950s. So what are we really doing with education? I think that if those grades are reflective, and I think that would give you what I think roughly like 70% are getting A's and B's, is that really an accurate measure? Maybe just adjusting the scores down a little bit and say, okay, here's where we're at, is going to be maybe a proper way of actually assessing student achievement. And that's really across the board. I mean, I think it starts at the elementary school level sometimes, and it goes all the way up through the system, where it's kind of like the system whereby, you know, a person gets an award simply for participating. That's great, you know, if you want to build their self-esteem. I think statistics say that Americans have the greatest self-esteem in the world. You know, that's great, but if you're not performing or not doing what you actually are doing, is that really good self-esteem? When you run against something that challenges you, you don't have the ability to overcome it. And maybe that's what's linking to this microaggression thing, is that they're being challenged and they don't know how to handle the challenge because they've never been challenged. They've just been given things as they come along, a sense of entitlement. And so when the first time they run into something, they have to defend themselves, it's hard.
When we come back, I want to take a real specific look then. If I were in your class at Servite and we were to take apart the current political agenda, how you would go about doing that. I think that might be a lot of fun. Okay. You're listening to Orange County Catholic Radio. I'm Rick Howick, and we'll be right back. And we're back on Orange County Catholic Radio, high atop the Tower of Hope here on the campus of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove. I'm Rick Howick, your host. And with me today, we've got Daryl Sequeira, who is a teacher at Servite High School, also a college teacher. And we've been talking about the nature of students at Servite High School the first part of the hour. And this last segment, we talked a little bit about what you see in college afterwards. Mm-hmm. I want to stir the pot a little bit.
Okay.
We're in political season, what I like to call silly season. And
how about March Madness?
March Madness at a whole different level.
That's right.
And if I were a student in your class, and Mr. Sequeira, can you explain to me the differences between the approach to governing that, say, Bernie Sanders takes versus what Donald Trump takes?
Okay. Well, first of all, normally we don't talk a whole lot of politics in the theology class, although it does come up because we're obviously talking about moral systems, we're talking about Catholic social teaching, and so those topics do come up, and so there are oftentimes, if we have the time allowing the classroom to discuss it, we will, and I kind of don't take one side or the other. I kind of try to help the students to see what both sides are arguing, what both sides are presenting. And one of the things that just kind of struck me as I teach philosophy and looking at this political season as it is currently kind of taking shape, so to speak.
Interesting shape that it is.
It is. It's a very interesting shape. It's kind of almost for me, you know, as a father and as a husband and seeing my kids is, you know, what's their future going to be like? And I take it back to what Catholic social teaching is about, that we are more than simply the material being. That what is important for us is not how much wealth do we accumulate. Not that having things is not a bad thing. I explain to the students all the time because I understand some of our students come from very affluent backgrounds. And I don't want to make them feel like, okay, if I have wealth, I'm somehow this evil person, or if I don't have it, that I'm somehow being disadvantaged with. That I want them to think beyond the material. And when I explain to them both sides of these two coins, I see the same side of what I call the materialist coin come from two different perspectives. One is material; it's both materially focused, that I need to have economic goods, and that is the main focus. Not that, again, people who have lost jobs or are unemployed, who are struggling financially, that this is not a concern for this. It obviously is a concern.
So let's take the current candidates out of it for a moment. What you have right now, then, is almost a socialistic perspective on one end and a capitalistic perspective on the other end. Almost as we were talking earlier, almost a Karl Marx versus an Ayn Rand.
Yes.
Explain that a little bit.
Okay, well, we go through in the philosophy class, we go through the modern philosophers, and two of them we discuss are Karl Marx, obviously very influential in the 19th into the 20th century, 21st century, and the idea of socialism, which is basically a top-down government run economic system for the most part. I mean, the classical definition of socialism or communism is where the government owns the means of production. So we go through this whole explanation of that. And then I also discuss objectivism, which is the Ayn Rand philosophy, which is, for lack of a better term, get everything you can for yourself, that you are the only person who counts, and that you do whatever it takes, that if everyone had the same attitude, then the whole world will be better. They both come from the same perspective, Rick. I think it's the materialist side of the same coin. On the one hand, on the Ayn Randian side, if you will, it is everything is about the material, and it's an atheistic understanding and philosophical outlook that Rand had. There's only material, and if everyone pursues their own material wealth, then everything will be fine. Flip that to the other side, and you look at Karl Marx. Karl Marx does the same thing. It's all about the material wealth, who owns the means of production. And they're really two sides of the same coin. Both are atheistic. Both see the only thing that's important in life is materialism, and that's what we need to focus on. And I think the Catholic perspective is that, yes, material is important. But I think when you look at what Catholic social teaching, all the way back to Rerum Novarum and Pope Leo XIII, that we are more than the material. That what is necessary, what I see necessary in society is, yes, the material needs to be met, but we are spiritually starving in our country. And because we've been inculcated with this materialist understanding of the world, that only those who are successful materially are counted. And I think that's a misnomer. And so people cling to one side or the other, whether it's Trump or Sanders, because they're going to provide the material well-being that we need, as opposed to looking at what is truly valuable, what is truly important. That those material needs are important, but at the same time, are we destroying ourselves as a community? Because it's haves versus the have-nots. It's the classical class warfare, if you will.
So if we go back to what the original founding fathers put forth here in the United States, mm-hmm. rights didn't come as a result of our materialistic needs.
Yes.
Rights did not come from a materialist government that mm-hmm. grants rights. Rights come as a result of what God gave us.
Correct. I mean, the Declaration doesn't quite come out, and a lot of people like to say it's a deist or, you know, Thomas Jefferson didn't believe in God. I think that's kind of a misunderstanding of history, in my opinion, having looked at it. We were very much steeped in what we would call Christian theology or Christian understanding of the worldview. I think it was John Adams who said, you know, this Constitution, this government is made for moral, religious people. And the more we've moved away from that, the more it doesn't work. And so we look for answers for different solutions, whether it's on the socialist side of the things or whether it's on the Ayn Randian side of the things. We've lost focus that what we are given is by our Creator, endowed with certain inalienable rights. These are not given by government. This was the point I was making last or 2 weeks ago when we were going over the Declaration of Independence and we were going over the Constitution, that these are innate within ourselves human rights that no government can give, take away, etc., that they have to be something that we understand within ourselves. And it speaks to a higher power. It speaks to a God that is creator. It speaks to a God that will provide for us. And we like to do things ourselves. We're a very individualistic society in our country. We do it by ourselves. And yet, I think we need a community. That's what family is. A family is a community. They help each other out. That's what the church is. It's a community that helps one another out.
I can think to a time not that long ago, say during the 1980s, when you had the two most powerful men in the country, Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill, mm-hmm. from very different perspectives, mm-hmm. Ronald Reagan being conservative, though in some respects not as conservative as some of the people that are currently involved in high political office right now, mm-hmm. and Tip O'Neill, who was liberal, but not as liberal as some of the people running for office right
correct,
now.
Correct, correct.
But both of them coming together to make compromises to actually run the government, because mm-hmm. there seemed to be an overarching understanding for each of them that God was involved in this, that there was something beyond themselves in this, and therefore we can come and reason together because I trust that you have my best interest at heart, mm-hmm. even though I disagree with you, mm-hmm. and you can trust that I have your best interest at heart, even though you disagree with me.
Right, right. I think looking at both, you know, both Reagan and Tip O'Neill, I mean, they're both dead now and they're, you know, moved on to the everlasting life, so to speak. But I think they came from a time period in which America, the United States, Western society still had a basic Christian moral perspective. It still believed in the common good. I think we might have defeated the Soviet Union in the Cold War, you know, at the end of the 1990s. But in essence, we've adopted what I would call the Marxist worldview of class warfare. That's become part of our society, us versus them. Somebody takes, whether it's corporations, whether it's big government, whatever it is, someone is battling each other. We don't have a sense of the common good that Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan, even if they came from two political sides of the spectrum, understood what the common good meant, understood that what we are seeking to do for society is build this common good. I don't see that happening in today's society. I think we are much more fractured into two very polarized camps that no one can see good on the other side. That's either my way or no way, and we are destroying ourselves as a country and as a society. I don't know what the solution is, Rick. I mean, I wish I had the magic bullet, so to speak, to clear that all up.
I think you're pointing out a very important observation. So a week ago, we had the Sisters of the Poor, the Little Sisters of the Poor, who were before the Supreme Court, and they're being forced, instead of being reasoned, they're being forced to actually either capitulate to what they're being told they must do or to abandon their ministry. Mm-hmm. And this goes back to, in my opinion, I think, and you're the philosophy major here, but to what Benedict was saying, Pope Benedict, in Regensburg when he was giving his speech, and it echoed throughout the Muslim world because he contrasted Christianity, which had to do with love and reason, versus how he saw the Islamic faith, how it moved in the 11th century, 12th century, into away from reason and into will.
Will, yes.
And that by an act of the will, you can be forced to be free. You can be forced into a religion. And that we in the United States seem to have moved toward the will in a way from reason.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I think we live in what when I teach my philosophy class, I call the postmodern world. The modern world was a science, Descartes, the Enlightenment, where reason was supreme. And I think we've moved away from that to a battle of wills. So one person wills, trying to struggle this will against the other. It's a classical, Friedrich Nietzschean kind of a universe where those who have the more superior will and have government behind them are going to force others to follow that will because we believe this to be the way that things should be. I think that's a dangerous perspective to have, that it's all about will and not about reason, that you can look at the other person's perspective and say, okay, we may disagree on whatever the moral standard is here, but I'm not going to force my will upon you. You can do what you need to do. But I think when we've moved away from that, Rick, when we've moved away, and again, not that everything originates in the 1960s, but when we moved away from this idea of rational dialogue, of being able to see truth, goodness, and beauty, that it just becomes a matter of will. Whose will is going to be in power? So right now, one party's in power, their will goes. And if it switches around the other way in the election and the next party comes in and it's their will now, you've got this titanic struggle of wills back and forth, two ideologies, nothing about the common good, nothing about what brings us together as a nation. It's simply one person has power now and we're going to stick it to the other side and the other side does it to the other side and there you have it. I think Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan could sit there and, they may have disagreed politically, but at the end of the day, they did what was right for the nation. I don't know if we have that any longer.
Wow, I wish I was in your class. If you would like to be in Mr. Sequeira's class or have your child, your son, go to Mr. Sequeira's class, Daryl Sequeira teaches religion at Servite High School, and that is located where?
It's in Anaheim, California, West La Palma Avenue. So if you're interested in the high school, again, contact Servite High School. The website, servitehs.org, and Chris Rear is the admissions director there, so give him a call.
And you've been listening to Orange County Catholic Radio. Daryl, thank you so very much for being here
with us.
Thank
you for having me, Rick.
And if you've missed any or part of our broadcast, you can go to our website at rcbo.org. And you can listen to any of our podcasts that we've put up there. And thank you to the listening audience for listening. And we'll be back with you again next week.